Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mystery Babylon News Radio on Thursday, July 31st, 2014. My name is Walt Stickle and I'll be your host for the next 45 minutes. The topic for this broadcast is the Catholic Founding Fathers and the Carroll Family and 1776, Part 2. I feel this is a much-needed fellowship and a history lesson at the same time. History is so important. We read God's Word, then we look into history and apply it. We are looking at the Catholic Founding Fathers and their role in history. Who writes history? Who was responsible for teaching us history? Why was I not taught about the Carroll family? We were taught about George Washington. Why weren't we taught about Washington's neighbor, Charles Carroll? Why weren't we taught about the wealthiest man in the colonial period, Charles Carroll? Why was I not taught about the Spanish Armada of 1587? I heard of the Reformation, but why was I not taught about the Counter-Reformation? Why was I just given pieces of the puzzle with many missing pieces? All of these questions are valid questions. I'd like to start this broadcast off here with some scripture. It's a scripture that everyone has heard before. It's Matthew chapter 10, verse 16. Behold, I send you forth as sheep in the midst of wolves. Be ye therefore wise as serpents and harmless as doves. Now let's read that a little bit slower. This is the Messiah speaking. This is in the red letters of the Bible. Behold, I send you forth as sheep in the midst of wolves. Be ye therefore wise as serpents and harmless as doves. Could it be that we are in the midst of wolves and there are wolves in the hen house? Notice I said wolves plural, because we have many wolves in the hen house. Now, my prayer is that we understand who is the head wolf and who is controlling the wolves in the hen house. Now we can ask the question, who is controlling the government of the United States? You know, I'm going to repeat this from the last broadcast, but let's review the word ignorant. And this is a quote from The Foreign Conspiracy Against the Liberties of the United States by Samuel Morris, 1835. The food of popery is ignorance. Ignorance is the mother of papal devotion. Ignorance is legitimate prey of popery. Ignorance, the condition of being uneducated, unaware, or uninformed. Most people, including ourselves, live in a world of relative ignorance. We are even comfortable with that ignorance, because it's all we know. When we first start facing truth, the process may be frightening, and many people run back to their old lives. But if you continue to seek truth, you will eventually be able to handle it better. In fact, you want more. It's true that many people around you now may think you are weird or even a danger to society, but you don't care. Once you've tasted truth, you won't ever go back to being ignorant. Let's go forward. Titus chapter 1, verses 15 and 16 reads, unto the pure all things are pure, but unto them that are defiled and unbelieving is nothing pure, but even their mind and conscience is defiled. They profess that they know God, but in works they deny him, being abominable and disobedient, and unto every good work a reprobate, a morally unprincipled person. Now, we were raised in America believing that this country was founded by Christians. Let's refresh our minds. In 1776, less than 1% of the population were Catholic and 99% Protestant. Remember the 16 questions in part 1 of this series? who was behind the intent and result of the Glorious Revolution in 1688? How many people, when I say this, even know what the Glorious Revolution is about? But that's what this broadcast is about. I mean, you can stop right here and do a Google search on Glorious Revolution in 1688. Now, continuing. I am not going to go into any great detail on the Glorious Revolution in 1688 at this time, but England had just replaced a Catholic king, James II, with a Protestant king. Understand, this is a big piece of the puzzle, the Glorious Revolution. Understand, my aim is that you will research this history. This series is just a history lesson, and our goal is to paint a picture of what was happening 200 years prior to 1776. Again, history flows like a river, and we have to navigate using the river. Water makes the river flow, so we have to go with the flow of the river. I am going to read the Royal Declaration, which was the result of the Glorious Revolution. When we understand that the Glorious Revolution in 1688, this will refresh our mindset in 1776, the time of the American Revolution. Now, the Royal Declaration is a big piece of the puzzle that has been left out of our history. Remember, deception by omission. Every king or queen had to agree with this, the Royal Declaration. Now here is the Royal Declaration. Understand, the king or the queen had to declare his allegiance and to England, and he had to say this when he was to start the king or queen to start their reign. It says, "I hereby, by the grace of God, king or queen of England, Scotland, and Ireland, defender of the faith, do solemnly and sincerely in the presence of God profess, testify, and declare that I do believe that in the sacrament of the Lord's Supper there is not any transubstantiation of the elements of bread and wine in the body and blood of Christ at or after the consecration thereof by any person whatsoever, and that the invocation or adoration of the Virgin Mary or any other saint, and the sacrifice of the Mass as they are now used in Church of Rome, are superstitious and idolatrous. And I do solemnly in the presence of God profess, testify, and declare that I do make this declaration and every part thereof in the plain and ordinary sense of the words read unto me, as they are commonly understood by English Protestants, without any evasion, equivocation, or mental reservation whatsoever, and without any dispensation already granted me by the Pope, or any other authority or person whatsoever, or without any hope of any such dispensation from any person or authority whatsoever, or without thinking that I am or can be acquitted before God or man, or absolved of this declaration, or any part thereof, although the Pope, or any other person, or persons, or power whatsoever, shall dispense with, or annul the same, or declare that it was null and void from the beginning." That's the end of the Royal Declaration. Now that, listeners, was the biggest historical find that I have found in my research. That is found in the Catholic Encyclopedia, 1912 edition. You know, how many people, Americans, understand that England was solidly Protestant. They called Roman Catholicism a superstitious and idolatrous religion. Now let's go from 1688, the writing of the Royal Declaration. By the way, that was set all the way up until 1910. And even today, the king or queen of England is supposed to be Protestant. Of course, Queen Elizabeth II has been to the Vatican more times than she can count. So England has been completely overtaken in 2014. But we're trying to figure out how we got there from 1776 and what the carols and the seed of Catholicism has flourished into in 2014. This is the picture I'm trying to paint. Now, in 1776, only 1% of the population were Catholics, and 99% were Protestants. Notice in the Royal Declaration where it mentions the words superstitious and idolatrous. Understand the mindset in the 200 years prior to 1776 considered the Church of Rome as a superstitious and idolatrous religion. All of the reformers of the Protestant Reformation considered the papacy as the Antichrist. Now this is just history, and that history that is never talked about and has been swept out of the minds of America. Again, deception by omission. Understand, I'm a Bible-believing Christian. Prior to the Protestant Reformation, the people did not have access to the Bible, because it was not allowed under the First Reich, the Holy Roman Empire. Only because of the reformers and the Reformation in 1517 do we have access to the Bible. Now there are two Bibles, a Catholic Bible and a Protestant Bible, the King James Version. Why were the Bibles taken out of the public schools in America? Because they were Protestant Bibles. In short, Now, why is it important in knowing the Catholic founding fathers, the Carroll family, in 1776? In 1776, there were less than 1% of the colonies were Catholic. By 1850, they were the largest denomination. How did they do this? By immigration. Plymouth in Massachusetts is where the Puritans landed. Today, Massachusetts is 46% Catholic. Why is the southern border wide open? Because Mexico is 95% Catholic. Today, we have 28 Jesuit universities, 50 Jesuit high schools, and 244 Catholic universities. 6 out of the 9 chief justices of the Supreme Court are Catholic, and not one Protestant. Vice President Joe Biden is a Jesuit, and Obama's mentor is Gregory Caluso, a former Jesuit priest. Jesuit Patrick Conroy was sworn in May 25, 2011 as House Chaplain, making him the first Society of Jesus priest to hold the position. Now let's be honest with ourselves. Why have we not heard these facts from our public school education, our mass media, the alternative media, because they are gatekeepers for the papacy, the Roman Catholic Church? I think this is important history. We have never heard real history presented. Take some time and share this with your friends and relatives. I'm selling nothing. This is just history. Remember, it is a deception. It is deception by omission. Remember, it is deception by omission. Proverbs chapter 23, verse 23. Buy the truth and sell it not. Also wisdom and instruction and understanding. Now, this is the aim of this broadcast. The Catholic founding fathers, the Carroll family, in 1776, is to give you all the pieces of the puzzle. When you understand the Carroll family, we will understand they were just the seeds of Rome. The Carroll family are very important seeds, but history shows us how quickly they germinated and grew into a force they are today in 2014. Last week, we talked about Charles Carroll. Now I'd like to turn our attention to Daniel Carroll. Daniel Carroll was a cousin of Charles Carroll and the brother of John Carroll. I'm going to read out of Grand Design Exposed, Chapter 16, The Birth of America, Orchestrated and Celebrated by the Church of Rome, page 329 to 331. Daniel Carroll, the Catholic Freemason Patriot. After the great work of separating themselves and gaining independence from British rule was accomplished, it was now necessary to form a suitable government for the new nation that would provide its citizens the guarantee of civil and religious liberties, which had been the real purpose of the revolution from the start. Yes, it was about guaranteeing the civil and religious liberties to the Roman Catholic Church, because they had none before the revolution. The Confederation of the United States had served its purpose during the war, but all agreed it had numerous shortcomings. So on the 25th of May, 1787, the Federal Constitutional Convention was held at Independence Hall in Philadelphia to draft a new constitution, with George Washington chosen to serve as its president. It was recorded, "This began the beginning of one of the greatest sessions of wise men in the history of the world, and two men, Thomas Fitzsimmons of Pennsylvania and Daniel Carroll of Maryland, were among those men representing their Roman Catholic interest." Daniel Carroll, brother of Archbishop Carroll, was politically, in his time, one of the most influential men of his native state, even though his illustrious brother and cousin, Charles, somewhat overshadowed his fame. Daniel Carroll had been a member of the Continental Congress, of the Maryland Council, and of the Maryland Senate, which at one time he was its president. As a member of the Continental Congress, he took an active part in the negotiations for the French alliance. After the Constitution of the United States had been framed, Daniel Carroll returned to Maryland, where, by his efforts, the American Constitution was adopted by that state. On the 17th of September, 1787, the draft Constitution was accepted, approved, and signed by 39 of 42 delegates present between the 7th of December and the 25th of June of the following year. Even though there was much opposition and reluctance because of the Constitution failed to adopt a Bill of Rights, each of the states individually ratified it. Those who favored the incorporation into the Constitution of a Bill of Rights that would include a provision for religious liberty waited patiently for the opening of the first Congress, which would then present the opportunity of introducing the amendments which they favored. In the work of the amendment, the Carrolls of Maryland were to play an important role. On the 6th of April, 1789, the session of the first Congress had a quorum in both houses to convene. George Washington was then unanimously elected first President of the United States under the new Constitution. His inauguration was on April 30th. The oath was administered by Robert Livingston, Grand Master of the New York's Grand Lodge. The Marshal of the day was another Freemason, General Jacob Morton. Yet another Freemason, General Morgan Lewis, was Washington's escort. The Bible used for the oath was that of St. John's Lodge, No. 1 of New York. Washington himself, at the time, was a master of Alexandria Lodge, No. 22, Virginia. The new government of the United States of America came officially into existence. Notice that they bring the Bible, that they're going to swear on the Bible. A Freemason does not believe anything in that book. And so is the Roman Catholic Church. They have one thing in common. They're both universalist. Next chapter now. Of the 39 men that officially brought the United States government into existence, there's quite an array of them that were Freemasons. Of them, 13 names are definitely known to be Freemasons. And more than that number, discreetly, have chosen to remain anonymous. But one man, surprisingly, or perhaps not so surprisingly, stands out in spite of and regardless of the Pope's anathemas and fearful excommunication that sends one to hell for being a Freemason. We find a Roman Catholic, Jesuit educated. Daniel Carroll's name among them, Daniel Carroll's name among those who are the most prominent of Freemasons. How is it possible that Daniel Carroll, who represented the top echelons of the hierarchy of the Roman Catholic Church in America, whose cousin Charles was the most vocal political spokesman for that church, and his brother John, a Jesuit, who founded the New American Roman Catholic Church, can be a Freemason? The answer to that question solves a deeply hidden message, a deeply hidden mystery. However, it was not until August that the matter of religious liberty was brought up for consideration. Charles and Daniel Carroll both were members of the new Congress. Charles Carroll was elected to the Senate and Daniel Carroll to the House. Wherever the contest was to be, whether in the Senate or the House, one of the two Carrolls was sure to be in the arena of action. The end result gave us the First Amendment to the Constitution, which reads, "Congress shall make no laws respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof." This was a day of great glory for the Carrolls and the Roman Catholic Church they represented. As another phase of the great work was accomplished, it firmly established by federal law liberty for the Church of Rome to function and flourish in English America. And that opened wide the door for good things yet to come. In a letter some years later to George Washington Curtis, the son of George Washington's wife Martha that he adopted, Charles Carroll said, quote, "When I signed the Declaration of Independence, I had in view not only our independence from England, but the toleration of all sects professing the Christian religion and communicating to them all full rights. Happily, this wise and salutary measure has taken place for eradicating religious feuds and persecution and become a useful lesson to all governments. Reflecting as you must on the disabilities, I may truly say, on the proscription of the Roman Catholics in Maryland, you will not be surprised that I had much at heart this grand design, founded on mutual charity, the basis of our holy religion." That was in the National Gazette, Philadelphia, February 26, 1829. Now, in 1827, in a letter to a Protestant minister, Charles Carroll wrote, quote, "Your sentiments on religious liberty coincide with mine. To obtain religious as well as civil liberty, I entered zealously into the revolution." Now stop, everybody. Let's stop and think. Why wouldn't he be zealously into the revolution? Before the revolution, before 1776, he had no religious rights, and he had no civil liberty. I want to stop here and recap the last paragraph that Charles Carroll said. It was in a letter some years later to George Washington Curtis, the son of George Washington's wife Martha, that he adopted, Charles Carroll said, and I quote, this is Charles Carroll, "When I signed the Declaration of Independence, I had in view not only our independence from England, but the toleration of all sects." Stop. Everybody stop. When in history has Rome ever tolerated all sects? Got to stop. Understand what he's saying. Now, I'm going to say this again. I'm going to start this over. This is a very important paragraph by Charles Carroll. "When I signed the Declaration of Independence, I had in view not only our independence from England, but the toleration of all sects professing the Christian religion and communicating to them all full rights." That's the start of the ecumenical movement. The ecumenical movement started in 1776. Happily, this wise and salutary measure has taken place for eradicating religious feuds and persecutions. Oh, isn't it terrible that the Catholics were persecuted so bad during the 13 colonies in those years? They couldn't say Mass. They couldn't eat their cookie. Oh, they couldn't build cathedrals. They couldn't hold office. How terrible, terrible they were persecuted. Now stop and think of the millions of God's people that this organization has eradicated. You know, and it goes on to say, "And happily this wise and salutary measure has taken place for eradicating religious feuds and persecutions." You know, for those years of Protestantism in England, they were eradicating all the persecution that they had received and all the religious feuds, the gunpowder plot, the Spanish Armada. England was sick of it. They were sick of it. That's why when I read the Royal Declaration, they called it a superstitious, idolatrous religion, because that's exactly what it is. A superstitious, idolatrous religion. The papacy, the biblical, historical, and prophetic Antichrist. And they were compromising. They were tolerating. They were preaching toleration. And what I think is so interesting here now is he makes I may truly say on the proscription of the Roman Catholics in Maryland, you will not be surprised that I had much at heart this grand design, founded on mutual charity, the basis of our holy religion. This is what this book is named after, John Daniels, the grand design exposed. We are exposing the evil and the wicked. And he closes in 1827 in a letter to a Protestant minister. Charles Carroll wrote, he's writing this to a Protestant minister, "Your sentiments on religious liberty coincide with mine. To obtain religious as well as civil liberty, I enter zealously into the revolution. Your sentiments on religious..." What are they doing? That's ecumenism. Ecumenism has been going on since 1776, and now it's just part and parcel of everybody. Just takes it for granted. Wake up, America. And when you see people that don't understand who the biblical, historical, and prophetic Antichrist, they're asleep. When you're deceived, you're asleep. Nobody listened to you. I can walk into a room when you're sound asleep. You're not going to listen to me when you're sound asleep. I have to wake you up first. This is what we're doing. We're waking up. Everybody, I'm saying wake up. Wake up. Look what we just seen here on this page. Now we're going to turn our attention to John Carroll. Now, let's turn our attention to Jesuit John Carroll. In the book Grand Design Exposed by John Daniel in Chapter 16, Birth of America Orchestrated and Celebrated by the Church of Rome, in page 331 to 334, Patriot, the subtitle in this chapter is Patriot Jesuit John Carroll. Now, as the Carrolls and Freemasonry were influencing the forming of the new American government that was brought into existence in the year 1789, precisely 13 years after independence was declared in 1776, we find also a very conspicuous correlation between the launching of the American government and the founding of the American Catholic Church hierarchy. For in that year, 1789, John Carroll founded and laid the cornerstone for the first Jesuit college in America at Georgetown, in what was afterwards to be the District of Columbia, and the college that George Washington's two nephews, Bushrod and Augustine, attended. And as George Washington was inaugurated the first president of the United States in 1789, so also was the John Carroll elected the first bishop of the Catholic Church in the United States in the same year. And as the jurisdiction of the first president of the United States was from Georgia to Canada in the north and from the Atlantic to the Mississippi, so too was the jurisdiction of John Carroll's diocese. Be assured, it is no coincidence that the American government, the American Roman Catholic Church hierarchy, and the Jesuit Georgetown College all marked their beginning from year 1789. But on top of that, it will be shown how a business venture put into operation also in 1789, with George Washington becoming their front man, enabling the Carrolls to have the American seat of government placed in their own front yard. Remember, there was 13 colonies. Which one of the 13 colonies was Catholic? It was Maryland. And where does the capital go up? Now, with a little discernment, you will recognize these little coincidences as perhaps telltale marks of the grand design as the Carrolls, the Jesuits, and the Freemasons played out their roles. It then should become understandable why the Jesuit Georgetown College was incorporated into the District of Columbia, seat of the new American government, and why the District of Columbia's very name is given in honor of Columbus, that great Catholic admiral who allegedly first discovered America and dedicated to the New World to Catholicism and the Pope. Have you ever, you understand why Columbus Day is a federal holiday? Ponder on that. I often wonder why are we celebrating Columbus Day and as a holiday when he didn't even get to the United States. It was Leif Erikson, a Viking, that first came over here. Now, back to the text. And as we learn that the Roman Catholics literally designed and built the complex for the new government, it should then begin to dawn on us who it was that masterminded the occult symbolisms that has flaunted in the city of Washington, D.C. Indeed, what our study has revealed, and as it continues to unfold, is that the evidence is overwhelmingly that the Roman Catholicism was center stage during every phase of establishing the new American government. Let me repeat that again. Indeed, what our study has revealed, and as it continues to unfold, is that the evidence is overwhelming that the Roman Catholicism was center stage during every phase of establishing the new American government. But let's take a brief look at the ecclesiastical vent to catch a glint of some of the most super wealthy and powerful Catholic personalities in England, participating and celebrating the longed for Catholic liberation that had just taken place in English America. The event is the consecration of John Carroll, the first Catholic bishop for the United States, who had been invited by occasion to England by Thomas Weld, and John Carroll had accepted. The Weld family had been important in the history of the Catholic Church in England for centuries. Humphrey Weld had acquired Lulworth Castle in Dorset in 1641, and it had remained the ancestral home since that time. Thomas Weld, the sixth possessor of Lulworth Castle, was a personal friend of King George III, who occasionally stayed at the castle. Are you catching on? When the first relaxation of the penal laws had come in 1780, Weld built on his estate St. Mary's, the first Catholic church built in England since the Reformation. It was in this church of Lulworth Castle, full to overflowing with friends including Lord and Lady Arundel of Ward, our castle, that John Carroll on Sunday, the 15th of August, 1790, was consecrated the feast day of the Assumption of the Blessed Mary. This was no ordinary gathering of ordinary people. Rather, it was quite an exclusive group of fabulous, rich Roman Catholic owners of castles dominating vast acres of land and estates. Understand, readers, listeners, Roman Catholic nobility has always been wealthy. Roman Catholicism has always been the religion of the nobility, whose owners were personal friends of the king, and castles where the king frequently visited and stayed. Was King George III sympathetic to Catholic grievances too? Did he clandestinely give support to separate the American colonies from England? Being of royalty and a personal friend of the Wells says quietly much. John Carroll himself traced his ancestry to the King of Ireland, but this special day was a day-long strive for the Catholics' history of England. For since England had entrenched herself to be Protestant, England indeed, along with her American colonies, had become a Catholic mission, with the Jesuits in the vanguard to reestablish Romanism once again among the English. And even though giving freedom to Catholicism in American colonies was just the beginning, it has nevertheless a day of great satisfaction, a day of great joy to celebrate, as Bishop Walmsley with Jesuit Charles Plowden and Reverend James Porter as his assistants laid his hands on the head of John Carroll and then applied the sacred oils liberally. Jesuit Charles Plowden, who preached on that memorable day when commenting on the American Revolution, said, before I read this, listen to every word that's being said here by Jesuit Charles Plowden. He says, quote, "Although this great event may appear to us to have been the work, the sport of human passion, Yet the earliest and most precious fruit of it has been the extension of the kingdom of Christ. The propagation of the Catholic religion, which heretofore fettered by restraining laws, it is now enlarged from bondage and is left at liberty to exert the full energy of divine truth. Glorious is the day, my brother, for the Church of God, which will see new nations crowding her bosoms. Listen, I forgot to tell you before I started reading this, Jesuit Charles Plowden is talking about the American Revolution. This is when they were putting the sacred oils on Jesuit John Carroll. Now let's read this again. Although this American Revolution may appear to us to have been the work, the sport of human passion, yet the earliest and most precious fruit of it has been the existence, it's been the extension of the kingdom of Christ. The kingdom of Lucifer. That's what they just said. The propagation of the Catholic religion. The propagation of Lucifer sun worship religion. That's what they just said. Which heretofore fettered by restraining laws, meaning it was, and this is what they meant, meaning it was illegal to practice their superstitious and idolatrous religion. Now, back to the quote, is now enlarged from bondage. My quote. Now Catholicism able to exert full energy to idolatrous lies. Back to his quote, and is left at liberty. What the liberty is he talking about? Liberty to say the Mass, which was illegal in England. And now it was legal in the United States to exert the full energy of divine truth. What divine truth is he talking about, this Jesuit? He's talking about the divine truth of Lucifer sun worship. Glorious is this day, my brother, for the Church of God, which sees new nations crowding her bosoms. They knew they had their foot in the door. They had split the wedge. They had broken the Protestant colonies from their mother, which they couldn't do by force. They did it covertly. Now, let's review Jesuit Charles Plowden's statement. Let's stop and go back in time to Sunday, the 15th of August, 1790, when Jesuit Plowden spoke this in a sermon. America had just become a nation in 1789. Prior to 1776, because of the Royal Declaration in England, had outlawed the superstitious and idolatrous religion of Lucifer sun worship, which is Roman Catholicism. Jesuit Charles Plowden reveals that the American Revolution was for the propagation of the Catholic religion. That statement of history has been totally swept out of the minds of world history through Jesuit casuistry. England is the only country that has ever legislated Catholicism illegal. Why? Because it is a superstitious, idolatrous, and it harbors tyrants. Programming the minds of the masses has gone on since the Garden of Eden. Our minds have been deeply programmed. And that is why I have used the words superstitious and idolatrous over and over. We have to understand that Lucifer sun worship is a superstitious and idolatrous antichrist religion. Roman Catholicism today is the center of Lucifer sun worship on earth. Now let's reread again what Charles Plowden says and let it sweep away the old programming and just let what he says reprogram the misinformation we have been running on. I have been using the word superstitious and idolatrous religion over and over. Why? because the world has forgot what England established. England is the only country that has ever legislated Catholicism illegal and became a protesting government. Now, when you read Jesuit Plowden's statement again, it will give you chills. Run out.